Welcome to Pediatric Insight, where we have candid conversations with members of the Child Health Advisory Council and some of the nation's top academic child health leaders. I am Wesley Milliken, CEO of Career Physician, and your host. Each conversation addresses a leadership challenge or opportunity that's top of mind for today's pediatric leaders. The council breaks it down based on the wisdom and experience obtained throughout their distinguished careers. And now, I'm honored to turn it over to the moderator in today's conversation.
Good morning or good afternoon, as it may be. Thank you for joining us for the latest Pediatric Insight communication. My name is Danielle LaRocca-Arena, and I'm happy to join you. Today's topic is effective transitions in leadership. What should a candidate think about when looking for a position when there is an interim chair? We begin this conversation with our distinguished panel of leaders who in the course of their careers have had to consider the impact of transitions. Today, we're specifically discussing the position of interim chair and how having an interim chair might impact the recruitment of faculty to an institution. The impetus for this discussion is the recognition that over the past few decades, there has been more attention to the phenomenon of interim leadership. With a reported annual turnover rate of departmental leadership by one source of 17%. Notably, the data suggests that interim chairs are appointed more frequently, serve for longer periods of time, and are more likely to assume permanent chair positions. While our conversation will not dwell on the various forms of transitional leadership, for example, interim versus acting, temporary, term limited, terminal chair, we will discuss how an applicant might better grasp expectation of this transitional leadership phenomenon and better assess its implication for their own career development or advancement. So let's begin with our first question to the panel. I would ask Dr. Arne Strauss and Craig Hellemeyer to address this one. What questions should a potential applicant ask when seeking a faculty position to a Department of Pediatrics where there is an interim chair in place? Additionally, what questions might elucidate how prepared the organization has been for change and how it will manage such change smoothly? Dr. Hellemeyer, and we'll switch to familiar terms. Craig, would you kindly comment on this?
Yeah, thank you, Danielle. I think that especially during one's first job, it's really important that you have a solid base and a solid foundation as you're starting this job, and that you have a pretty clear understanding of what your responsibilities are going to be, what your goals are, the resources that you're going to have those in terms of time allocations, in terms of any other resources that you may require for success in meeting those goals. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to be important, regardless of if there's a permanent position of the chair of the department or if it's a temporary or an interim position. And so to the extent that you can make those things comfortable to you, then you're going to be able to make that decision. Now, clearly, interim leadership makes it somewhat more problematic, but it also depends in terms of the other support that you're going to have within that institution. The chair of the department might be interim, and you might be very interested in working in a research institute or working with a clinical investigator in another department or even in that own department. And that recruitment may not be all that dependent upon the chair of a department that you're looking at. But it really is important to make sure that as you approach making that decision, you understand what those support structures that you have are going to be as you go forward. Because you really, during those first few years, you want to have a very good understanding of what your expectations are, what the institution's expectations of you are, and how you're going to meet the goals that you've set for yourself.
Thank you. That's wise advice. Arne, do you want to add to that?
I think one of the key approaches for such a candidate is to explore with everyone with whom they interview what the culture of the institution is. What is it that the people that have been designated to talk with a candidate feel is important to the institution? What is the environment like for research if it's a researcher? What is the support or expectations for clinical care and time? And I think that will answer a lot of the questions about what's going to happen subsequently when a permanent chair is named. So explore the culture, but not just with one or two people, with everyone. I also think that specific questions, such as Greg alluded to, about environment and support in the candidate's area of interest are particularly important. So again, if it's a researcher, what are the core facilities that are available? If the candidate is a clinician, what are the expectations in terms of time and effort and output? And then for everyone, what is the time available for academic activities so that you have an understanding of what the institution is like for others who are already there? And then, of course, one should expect to meet with the interim chair and ask specifically, how is the institution going to support me as a faculty member? And I think direct questions in this regard, at least at the second visit, are crucial so that the candidate has an understanding what sort of institution exists.
Yeah, you know, I agree with what both Arnie and Craig were saying, and I wonder if it isn't reasonable for a recruit to actually ask during his visit to meet with other faculty who have recently been recruited in such a situation to get a sense of the level of support that they're receiving from the interim leadership. And then, as I think both Craig and Arnie have suggested, finding out who else besides the chair is going to be impactful on your success, and getting a chance to meet with them and potentially getting commitments from them.
Thank you. I'll transition to the next question, which is the obvious one, which is, should a candidate for such a faculty position just avoid an institution that is in transition, as reflected by the presence of an interim chair? Bob, do you want to take that on as well?
Given the context that you frame this discussion with, I think it's difficult to avoid these situations. They're relatively common. It's a matter of doing your due diligence and getting reassurance from all those other people who are going to have an impact on your career, and being comfortable with the institution and its track record. You know, the other thing is that in my experience, people who are appointed to interim or acting leadership roles typically are people who have a pretty good standing in the institution and are indicative of the culture of the institution. And it's infrequent for, you know, an interim chair to then have a new chair come in and just completely change everything. So I still think you can, even with interim leadership, get a sense of the institution and what its commitments are.
We haven't really talked about whether we're talking about a faculty member or a division head.
Yeah, good point.
And say that this is your first academic job. I think there's so many factors besides the chair that affect your ability to succeed in that role. In many departments, the division heads have a fair amount of autonomy. And so the criteria that you would want to look at a position as a faculty member, especially early in your career, I don't think are necessarily that tied to the chair. You know, I think you can have written assurances for your resources and be fairly well assured. And you'd want to understand your kind of support and the collaborators, like Dr. Strauss mentioned, and what the success of other people who have joined the division are, regardless of whether the chair was permanent or not. What kind of departmental resources are there to support you? If you're a division head and looking, then, you know, I think understanding how decisions are made, how resources are allocated, getting to know the department administrator quite well, I think is really important to understand how commitments are made. And then we didn't really talk about, what if you have a permanent chair but don't have a permanent dean? Where does a chair go to get their resources? If they're interim, what kind of support has been promised to the interim chair to really understand what conditions the person who took the interim role accepted the position on? Was it with the guarantee that she or he could recruit someone and would have the resources to do that or not? So those are things that kind of come to my mind that we haven't really maybe quite addressed yet.
Bruder brings up an interesting point. I think I'd like to go back a little bit to what Arnie talked about. I think it's really important to look at this from the other direction. If you are a division chief or a chair and you want to recruit someone and there's interim leadership involved in the hierarchy that's going to be supervising that individual. And I think it's really important to look and have examples of other people who have come into the organization similar to the candidate. And if they've been successful, that's probably one of the best indicators that the culture of the organization is indeed not as dependent upon a person, but has really established itself as an entity which is going to bring in younger faculty or younger or a division chief and help them to be successful. I think that if it's a chair that's coming to look at an interim chair position, that's even more important to look at other chairs who've been brought into the organization and that the resources were made available to that individual to be successful. So that's sometimes looking at the situation in another direction can give you more clarification, I think.
I would just elaborate a little bit on what both Craig and Bruder said. And I think if you're a faculty recruit with an interim chair, depending on the size and scope of the institution and the job you're being recruited to, asking to talk with the dean about the plan or the search committee for a new chair, for example, about the plan for recruitment and the commitments for that recruitment is a reasonable request. And I think that whether or not that request is granted actually, I think, indicates what the seriousness of the institution is about recruiting, for example, a new chair. I think it's really important to be proactive, that is, ask those that are going to be making the decisions about what the plan is.
Thank you for commenting on that, because I think in the literature, there's certainly some data to, and we haven't used this term yet, succession planning, that there's an organized process that regardless of change, which is to be expected in any situation, that there is actually a process there. So thank you for those comments. So let's move on to another question. Let's say you've gone, you're such an applicant, right? You're a faculty position looking at this, and you've actually made the decision to go ahead and accept the position, all right? So we're talking about the sort of negotiation stage. What are the key questions that, you know, or things that you should be negotiating in your contract, okay, or your agreement, depending on how the institution does this? And Bob, can we start with you?
Yeah, I think we've touched on a little bit the conversations that were mentioned, the people with whom you should meet to get a sense and level of commitment other than your direct boss is really important and should be as much as possible incorporated into the negotiation. My mentor gave me advice many years ago that I think is still apt. He stressed that rather than asking for an itemized list of all the things one might need or that one anticipates needing, may not be the best way to go. That rather it's more important to get the institution to commit to the vision that you have. Even as a junior faculty member, you know, having some overall agreement about what the goals are. And then should resources become tight, the conversation that you have is different. It's like, hey, we agreed that this was where we were headed. This is what I think I need to get there. He thought that was more lasting, more enduring than people who came in and asked for A, B, C, D, E, and F, because they might get partway through their career and realize that they need G, H, and J, you know? So that's advice that I've given to a lot of people, and I think has worked pretty well.
Can you speak, because you are obviously in the surgical field, are there any specifics to that, to kind of the interventional recruitments that may pertain to what you've just said?
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's where the rubber meets the road. I guess you can get a conceptual agreement. Say you join a PEDS GI group that doesn't do a lot of procedures and your charge is to increase that, you know, then when it comes time to access to anesthesia or to the GI lab or to the OR or whatever, the conversation might be a little more productive to say, hey, this is a goal that we all agreed to. You know, I'm trying to grow this program because of its importance to the institution, help me out here, versus I need 2 days a week in the cath lab or 2 days in the OR. So I think it's a little more flexible and a little more compelling to have that broad agreement on goals and outcomes.
Thank you. Bruder, you've had a lot of experience in this area and you've actually written about this. Do you want to add to that in terms of, you know, what needs to be specific in the contract or, as Bob says, you know, just the commitment to the vision? What's your thought?
Thanks, Danielle. I had to smile when Bob talked about the vision and not having this laundry list of 100 pages of detailed request. There's Simone's maxims. One of his maxims is that the longer the wish list for a faculty appointment, the shorter the time that will be at the institution. I think the vision is critical. The other thing is for anyone to be, you know, if a person is strategic and has really a good plan for their career development, there are certain things that are critical. You know, whether it's certain equipment that they have access to or space that they have to have, understanding what is required. And space is one of the most difficult things because, first of all, it takes time. It takes capital commitments. And I think that is one of the potentially riskier aspects, you know, and would require a much broader institutional commitment in writing. And I think, of course, you want the things that are really critical for your success to be in writing, understanding what you need to be successful and understanding who can make those commitments and assuring yourself and getting them to commit in writing that that's the case. And then understanding, what's been the track record there in those people's ability to produce. I don't think anyone would lie to you, but I think, you know, sometimes people have dreams.
So, you know, we sort of progressed to kind of the things to consider then kind of the negotiating, but then addressing both short-term success in the recruitment for that individual and long-term success for both the individual and the institution. In your experience, you've done this across many institutions and seen some of those successes and situations where there's an interim chair. Share with us sort of what some of the elements of success, both short-term and long-term, have been in your experience.
Danielle, I agree with you. I think success in a search is not truly did you fill it. You know, success in a search is that faculty member, that leader still there 5 years from now impacting, you know, the community of kids that they're serving. And so I think when you think about it from that perspective, it drives a little bit of what one might think about negotiating for or asking for. I do, not to get in a debate with my colleague, Dr. Sawin, but I would just add to what Bob's shared about your vision and trust. I think we're talking about an interim leaders of some capacity that are going to weigh in on your success. Sometimes you have leaders who may not fully appreciate, Bob, to your point, what it takes to build an advanced endoscopy program, or there's something unique in every subspecialty that somebody that's not a GI expert may not fully appreciate it. So I think, yes, you want to have a grassroots level of trust and understanding around your vision. But one way for a candidate in an interim situation to really test the organization is to have a really detailed, you know, mentor scrubbed plan for what it's going to take for them to come there and be successful. It doesn't mean where you grow or ruin the relationship is how you interface from there, right? Because you have to understand no organization can do everything today, right? So how this thing gets stair-stepped through the years is important. But when an organization sees your 4 pages on what it's going to take to build an advanced endoscopy program, you're going to be able to tell a lot when leaders react to that plan as to whether or not there's two things, a full commitment and the ability to live into that over the next 3 to 5 years. And so to me, that's got to be there before then, Danielle. You can see the success beyond taking the role.
Very thoughtful comments. Bob, since you were mentioned.
Yeah, I don't disagree with what Wesley said. I did want to ask, though, there's an interesting dynamic over the last decade or so of the children's hospitals often are the ones with the resources. We've spent a lot of time talking about the chairs and the deans, but sometimes, particularly in some of the surgical specialties, the negotiation actually tends to be with the institution, you know, for institutional resources. That may be a little more reassuring to the candidate. It does, however, sometimes put those of us who ran departments in a challenging position, because it could potentially compromise our leadership over our own fiefdom, if you will. I mean, I think that's one of the challenging dynamics of leadership now in children's hospitals, is one has to really be able to interface with lots of different people between multiple institutions. So that adds a complexity to recruitment during an interim or acting leadership.
Thank you for those additional thoughts.
Yeah, Danielle, I think one last thing, again, following up on what everybody said today, is when there's a lot of fluidity in an organization, I do agree with Craig's first comment of the day that you really can't ignore great opportunities. You know, leaders want to grow, build, and sometimes when things are bad, it's an incredible opportunity to have impact. So I do think, Bob, to your point about the hospital's role in this, if it's an interventional surgical sided thing, the hospital is always involved. And if I were a candidate and there were interim leaders in place, either on the hospital side or on the college side, a lot of times your offer letter is only going to be signed by the college. And we've always been candidate advocates, so it's pretty common advice in that situation that I would suggest to the candidate that they ask to have the children's hospital and the college sign their offer letter, just for additional clarification that everybody was on the same page at one point in time in this conversation. So I think it's just added protection, but
I agree wholeheartedly. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a complex situation we're seeing more and more in health systems, right? That have the academic piece, but then have an independent clinical service piece, and the integration of those to move forward is critical. So thank you for that. So I think we've had a good conversation on a topic that I started by thinking about this, that the only constant is change, and therefore change in leadership is going to be part of that. So I just want to summarize what I've certainly learned from your comments, and I hope we convey to the audience who's looking at it, that clarity is important, right? And we talked about the number of time, clarity in terms of time, resources, supports, the structure, and very importantly, what the culture of the institution is. You pointed out that it's important to talk to various direct and indirect sort of influences on the position you're going to take, and whether you are an early career person or whether you're coming being recruited for leadership positions such as division chief, it may dictate who you ask to speak to in frank conversations, for example, with a dean when there is an interim position there. The other thing I heard is a real commitment to vision, and the comment for that was also speaking to understanding if there is a belief in you as the faculty who's being recruited. Is there shared vision and therefore both short-term and long-term commitment to you? I also heard the term, who are you serving? That for many folks going into pediatrics and other fields, their motivation for a new faculty position is actually who they're going to serve in that community, right? Whether it's at a research level, educationally, or community-based, who are they serving? Because that may be the driver in deciding where you're going to live and where you're going to accept a position. I'm going to quote, I hadn't heard this term, mentor scrub plan. So mentorship, really important. So thank you for that. And of course, not to miss an opportunity and to assess carefully the organizational capacity to manage change effectively and to have an opportunity that really leads to success. So thank you all. This has been a fun conversation, and I hope useful to all of us. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's discussion. If you have a question for our council or have a future topic suggestion, please connect with us at pediatricinsight.com. The Child Health Advisory Council is comprised of a diverse group of emeritus deans, department chairs, division chiefs, and child health executives recognized for their leadership contributions in academic pediatrics and child health. The CHAC's impact is further bolstered by Council Specialty Advisors, who are active, current national leaders in each of the subspecialties in pediatrics. Collectively, the 30-plus members of the CHAC bring unmatched wisdom and experience to career physicians' executive search and leadership development endeavors for its clients. Our council members include the following physicians: Bruder Stapleton, Christine Gleason, Craig Hillemeyer, Renee Jenkins, Danielle LaRocque Arena, Valerie Opapari, Bruce Rubin, Robert Sawin, and Arnold Strauss. To view our council members' bios, please visit careerphysician.com and click on the Child Health Advisory Leadership tab.